start. Oh, that is really loud. Hold on. Hello? Do you mind saying something?
I can say anything, everything, nothing at all. All of the words could be said and nothing at all could be understood.
That's beautiful. Okay. Sorry. I don't want to, like, be in your face, but I have to make sure, like, you know, I get, like, the good audio.
Yeah.
That good shit.
Do you want me to move my...
No, it's okay. Wait, can I say something again?
Yeah, I can see.
Okay, this is good. Okay. So is this okay? I'm like kind of.
Yes.
Okay. So the very first question: how do you feel about the statement "race is not real"?
I actually sort of agree with the statement. I feel like race is kind of is something that's evolved, and it's sort of like where you live and where you came from or where your ancestors came from, but it's not really like a real thing. Like, I don't know. It's not something that I. Like, I was born in Kenya, and so I spent a lot of time just not thinking about race because it was, like, it was mostly black people. And so I was like, yay. And then I moved here, and I was like, oh, I guess this is, like, an identity, like, a marker that people, like, constantly think about. And so it became very weird. But I don't know. Race, I'm not sure race is very real, but racism definitely is.
So if you wouldn't mind, I wonder if you could talk to me about that a little bit. So you grew up in Kenya. Or how old were you when you came to the States?
11.
11. So you kind of, I mean, tell me if I'm putting words in your mouth, but I'm guessing maybe you came here and then became a black person, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
What was that like for you?
Well, I didn't really notice I was really a black person until maybe high school when I had like my first real like racial encounter. And I was like, this is based on race and not just like on anything else that like it's so easy to like pawn off to like I'm female or I'm just not smart or like my English isn't very good. Or like there's like a lot of things I could like toss it onto. But there's this program I was trying to get into. There's all these interviews and they like hadn't shut the door all the way behind me post my interview. And so I was waiting in the waiting room with this other girl. And they were like these three old ladies and they were talking about the process and I was like standing up to close the door because I realized what they were about to do and I just kind of heard like, oh, but she's black. Do we really want her to like represent Ames, which is the town I'm from? And I was like, oh, okay. So that was really weird. And so then after that, it still took me a really long time before I really came to terms with the fact that it even carried that much weight beyond just like, is a thing, like, we moved to this neighborhood and we were the only black family there and our neighbors commented on it. But there were, like, there's, like, overt things, but there's a sort of, like, but it's not everyone. It's a generational thing because it's old people. And then coming to Antioch is kind of like, wow, it's not always generational and it's more prevalent than I think I was willing to admit. So it took a long time, though. I feel like if I'd been raised here, if my parents had been, they would have been, like, this is a thing, and they would have been more actively, like, racism is... And race is something that's, like, a major identity factor versus, like, what I thought was really important was my tribe. Like, I was, like, that was what I thought was a really important, like, identifier for a long time. And then I was, like, no.
So I have two questions, one on deck, though, so don't worry about that one. I'm not even going to ask it yet. But do you feel like you identify with Black American culture now that you're here? Or do you at all? Or... is it something that you acknowledge as something that's also you've assimilated as someone who's lived the rest of their life up in, from 11 here?
I think it's really hard because I know, like, if I think back to my high school, for instance, there were, like, the black kids and then there's, like, the African kids. And the African kids are not quite the same as the black kids and we had different experiences and, like, different expectations placed upon us. And I feel like... at Antioch, it's a little different because I think a majority, like, I don't know, like, if I'm thinking of just, like, the black people at Antioch, a majority of us are from, like, African descendant. And so that was, like, it was really easy for me to connect with them in a way that I hadn't been able to connect with a lot of black Americans up until this point. And so, I don't know, it's very... I think it's a culture that I've taken on, but I think there's still a lot of aspects of, like, Black American culture that I'm kind of like, that's a questionable thing that you did there. Like, really weird, but, like, I take it on because it's understood that, like, everyone else is going to look at me and be, like, Black and American because I also lost my accent. So it's always, like, this is your experience just from meeting me. And I'm like, no, actually, it's not. But, yeah, I don't know. I guess I took it on versus... I've changed into it, but I've accepted that it might be placed on me.
You just said that you lost your accent. So did you grow up speaking English or did you learn it here?
I started learning it before we left Kenya because English is one of our national languages, but we learn it in school. It's not like a mandatory thing. So you start in third grade. So I'd been sort of low key picking it up, but like not really, not in a practiced way. And then we just started having grammar lessons. And then I came to the States and they're all like, all right, you actually need to know English in like a really proper type of way. So I learned most of my English here, but which was a time. But yeah, I don't know. I lost my accent really quickly. I'm sort of like a chameleon. Like my little brother still has a little bit of an accent. He was like, he was 9 when he came here, and I'm like low key pissed about it. But like, I don't know. After like a year, it was just like basically like American accent. So
that's really surprising. You know, most people, like my mom's been in this country. I mean, given she had come here when she was 25, but she's been in this country longer than she's been in her native country, and she still has an accent. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like there was some like a survival instinct within that to do that? Or yeah. What was the process of that? Did you really, really not want to have an accent?
I really wanted to hold on to like being Kenyan. Like this is like a thing that I really struggled with for a really long time. And I think it really hindered my ability to see racism in general, was because I was just kind of like, I'm Kenyan, this is like my heritage and who I am and blah, blah, blah. And so it took a really long time of like denying kind of this American aspect of me, because if like I realistically think about it, I'm like very split in half now. Like my experiences are basically both in between, but like you really develop a lot more in this like later years. I think like you really become like the person that you're gonna be. And I spent that time here in the States. And so I feel like I tried really hard to hold on to the accent, but it went away so quickly. And it was mostly to survive. I was like really scared about adapting and like not fitting in. And I was like incredibly timid back then, like really shy. Like if my mother wasn't there, I was probably not gonna talk to anyone. Like, yeah, I don't know. It was very like necessary. And my brother was always outgoing and always loud, and he really just didn't care. And there wasn't an expectation on him either, because I was like the smart one. And so it's like, you need to excel anyway. And so there's this added pressure that like, if I simulate, if people like me enough, then it'll be fine. And I tried, I like did all the things. I like changed all my clothes when I came here. I like took on my American name. I like did all this stuff and was just kind of like.
What's your American name? Is it Melly or?
Melissa.
Melissa.
Yeah, my old name is Amondi. That's like my actual name. That's
beautiful.
Name,
and Melly's beautiful too.
Yeah, I really like Melly, but. Yeah, it was just sort of like I tried really hard to fit in, and that was just one of those things. And like if I move regionally, I also got regional accents too. Mm. And so like from Connecticut to Reno, it's like East Coast accent to like this like Western accent, and then like Iowan accent. Iowans are like base level. Like they really don't have an accent. But yeah, but it was definitely something I noticed, and it's definitely I think I need to adapt and survive in any situation type thing.
I think it's really interesting that, like you were saying, like now that your cultural experiences are split in half, and like you went from your old name to your new name to now Melly, and that's kind of a good blend of that. I think that's really symbolic in a way. Sorry, I just wanted to say that. But yeah, sorry, going back to the question, I was just interested, and it adds background too. Hearing that argument, like on campus for me, from like people that are white males, makes me quite like upset. But then like I hear that argument from you and I'm like, oh my gosh, it makes perfect sense. Like, of course, like, so how do you feel about the concept of like, depending who it comes from, you know, like, do you agree with it? You know, when people say like, cause like when I hear it, it's like almost like a denial of like, you know, like your skin color or like the way you look. And it's very like racism is here. Like your race is different. You know what I mean? So what do you think of that perspective of it? Or do you still, even then, still say, like, race isn't real in that way? I'm not trying to skew your argument. I'm just curious.
I totally agree with you with the fact that, like, if a non-person of color says that to me, I feel a certain type of way, because I feel like when they say it, they also don't acknowledge racism. Like, I feel like they say it, and then they're like, which means racism is inherently also not real. And that's not a thing. Like, I think... How do I want to describe this? I don't think race is real, because I would rather believe that, like, all in all, we're all just kind of this people. And that's like this, like calling like one zebra and another zebra different because their stripes are like low key a little more sideways than the other one. Like it's like this thing that doesn't really matter. But since like if we start discriminating against it, then like racism is very real. And I'm willing to say that racism is real. And like, this is a roundabout way. Let me say this again.
It's okay.
Racism is real because we've put these discriminators between people who are darker than other people. And so when you comment on the fact that they are blah, 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 because they're black or because they're whatever, then that's racism. And we're commenting on the skin color. Skin color is obviously race, but race kind of refers to this kind of like other being. Like race refers to this idea that like we're inherently different and we're just not. And so I don't believe in race because we're not different. We're just talking about the color and tone of our skin. And so I don't know how to describe it. I guess I wouldn't mind if someone else said race is not real if they actually understood that there's a difference between race and racism.
Mm-hmm. That was good, thanks.
So turned around.
Okay, so we're gonna switch gears a little bit. Well, we kind of ordered the questions like not pertaining to one another, but we're just gonna go with the order anyway. I'm really sorry. No. So what are your feelings or thoughts about POC culture on Antioch's campus?
POC culture.
Do you mind if I put my feet here?
No.
Okay.
Can you describe what you mean by that?
When Alyssa and I wrote that question, we were primarily referring to like how it's almost like a counter or subculture of Antioch. Mm. And so within that, and we're active participants in it, like how we feel it affects us, how we feel it influences our mainstream white culture, if you will. And yeah, like, do you think it's a positive thing? Do you think it's a negative thing?
Yeah, I love POC culture. I think it took a long time to develop. So from my observations, like when I first got here, there was the first three classes. And so that would be 2015, 16, and 17. And I think because they had such few numbers, they were not as connected and they didn't really have much of like a culture amongst themselves. But once we added numbers and 2019ers added numbers, so it's like a very evident one. And I think it's growing and I'm really excited about that change. But I love POC culture here. I think it's louder than like a normal culture, Antioch, broader Antioch culture. I think it's more accepting. I feel like we are quicker to laugh about things, but also quicker to support angry endeavors, which I think is a really good combination because sometimes in a social justice school, I feel like it's so easy to feel like you're by yourself in a situation and you're just kind of like, I'm the only person who feels angry about whatever is happening. And that can be really detrimental for your own like motivation or like moving on and being like, I'm gonna change the world. But like within POC culture, if someone comes in is kind of like, guys, I'm so pissed about this thing, everyone's immediately like, oh, I got you, or like, oh, that sucks, or like, do you need to like dance it out, which is like a really solid solution. But yeah, I think it's evolving into something that I see as really positive and really communal in a way that it wasn't before. So
why do you think that POC culture is objectively speaking, like we all have different like backgrounds and cultures, right? Most of us, like there are black, like African Americans and Africans and Asian people and like Southwest Asian, you know what I'm saying? So like, even though those cultures are all different, what keeps that air of acceptance and support within the entire group itself as a unit?
Well, for one thing, I think it's just because we're outnumbered. Like that's like the base thing, that even if you're the only person from that country or from that experience, or there's just two or three of you, it's better to have someone who almost has something similar to latch onto than someone who has just like never experienced it at all. And I think the other thing that really keeps us together is there's a certain amount of irritation that comes with daily, day-to-day activities at Antioch. Like, I think it's really easy to go into a classroom or a dining hall or just a space and, like, think about, like, the food that's being made or, like, the conversations or those perspectives and be like, I've actually had an experience with this in which, like, I know this is, like, inherently wrong and, like, unhelpful. But to, like, go up to, like, one of my white friends and be like, oh my God, they tried to make Kenyan stew last night and it was actually, like, not Kenyan at all. They'd be like, oh, that's unfortunate. But then if I were to go to, like, another person of color, maybe they were Hispanic, and I'd be like, oh, they tried to make Kenyan stew and it, like, was not Kenyan stew at all. They could go like, yeah, they make tacos here. Not real tacos. Like, it's not the same cultural thing that we're, like, latching onto, but it's that same experience and that same, like, emotion. You can, like, lean back on it, and so it's easier to pull from it.
Of being, like, misrepresented or misunderstood, or both?
Of being misunderstood, probably, and misrepresented, both. That was good. That was good. I was definitely thinking about it. Probably both. I think it's really unfortunate, actually, that POC culture really stems from the fact that it's out of necessity and out of, like, a less positive thing. Like, it stems from the fact that we don't have all of the support systems that we need, and we don't have all of the, like, correct representations, or, like, it's easy to misunderstand a lot of people that are POC. Like, it's just so easy for me to sit at a table of Black women and be like, hello, and, like, start laughing about something, and then, like, I don't know, people look over at us, and it's just kind of like this look of, like, what are they doing, and, like, suspicion. But in, like, if you were to see a group of white people laugh really loudly in Birch, you're just like, whatever. I feel like it would be so interesting if POC culture was more derived from the fact that we wanted to, like, build more community and have more connections with one another, versus, like, we want someone else to understand how, like, we had a terrible day, or, like, yeah. I don't know.
Oh, sorry. So, if you could explain the POC disappearance day of disappearance action, in your own words, as well as why you feel was impactful or maybe not impactful.
The day of disappearance was originally supposed to be a day in which we showed the community what it was like not to have POC on campus. And it was an idea that was proposed, I guess, last quarter, but was only done this quarter. And I feel as though it was both impactful and not impactful. I think it was really impactful in the fact that it was brought to everyone's mind how different the campus would be if they weren't able to retain students of color, which is, like, a major issue. Because if you don't have a presence that's, like, heard, like, a presence that's respected on campus, or, like, one that you feel is supported, then you leave, because there's nothing to attach you here anymore. There's nothing to be like, if I were to leave, someone would care. And I think that was what the day of disappearance meant for me. It was kind of being like, would this campus be the same if it didn't have all of us there? And although I heard a lot of, like, interesting feedback, where it was kind of like some people thought about it and were just, like, they noticed. And that was surprising to me, because I didn't think they would actually notice. I didn't think they'd, like, make the connection either as to why people were missing their class. But it was very interesting to be around people being like, oh, you guys are back. We were, like, gone. It was, like, really obvious in, like, my class, because, like, half my class was just kind of, like, empty. And I was just like, oh, no, there's no students of color right now. And, like, we were trying to have this, like, conversation. And then I was going to ask this question. And it was like, oh, do you know who would be helpful in this situation? Someone who's lived this experience, and now they're not here. But there's also kind of this rhetoric that some people didn't notice at all. And in those classes, it's because they never discuss anything about race or about diversity or something that would make them think that, like, they need to, like, be careful or, like, tone police. This is the other thing. The only reason some people noticed was because they were about to say something. We're about to tone police. We're about to look over to say, look at the person while they spoke and then realize the person wasn't there. Like, it was the act of being like, oh, I'm going to say something maybe disrespectful, looking for someone that made them realize they weren't there.
Wait, how did you know that?
Because I was talking to someone, and, like, on Wednesday, so after the day of disappearance, and they were just kind of like, oh, yeah, it was really weird. We almost, like, were trying to have this discussion, and it became very awkward, and I was just like, why? And they were just like, well, we were talking about, it was an anthropology class, and so I don't know what they were talking about. But they were talking about some, like, something, and they were just kind of like, I wanted to say something, but I thought it might offend one of the people of color in my class. And so I was just going to, like, look over to them to be like, I don't mean to, like, say anything off hook or, like, blah, blah, blah. And then I realized they weren't there, and I was just like, wait, what? And then I looked around, and I'm like, oh, no, the other two aren't there either. And I was just like, oh, and they're just like, but I was trying to be, like, inclusive. Like, this was, I was trying to make sure that, like, everyone's voice could be heard and, like, they could go first. And I was just like, this is why. Like, why didn't you just notice because you enjoy the people in your class? Why is it that you only notice because you wanted to say something that was maybe problematic? So,
interesting.
I don't know, it was just a very mixed bag of, like, noticing for the wrong reasons, noticing because they were actually concerned, and then not noticing because they weren't in a space in which they felt they would, which is this whole other thing. So I'm not sure it was super impactful for the people outside of POC, but I think it was impactful for the POC community.
Can you talk a little bit about kind of what we did that day and what happened within CSKC?
Yeah. So that day was a really good day to regather as a community. I think it took between the transition of last quarter and this quarter and the fact that we have my class back on campus and they were kind of knew what was happening but didn't know what was happening. And then the staff and faculty weren't super involved in the discussions. Having that day to talk about our next steps, to talk about where we have been, to talk about our feelings about POC housing and see if we understand each other the way we assumed we did when we started, but also talking to faculty and staff and getting that input was super important because it really brought, at least to me, a really clear sense of community amongst ourselves that was very much like we are all in this together and it's not like we support you from afar but the key people will go and do the work. But it was kind of like, we're all here to do the work. And that was really encouraging.
Do you think that in that day, the unity that was felt was because of the kind of negative rooted unity you talked about before of just, oh, well, I'm having this awful day and you understand I don't have to say anything? Or do you think it was a different sort of unity that day?
I think that day came from a really positive space. Like, I think this is why I'm really excited, because I think our community is now being built off of more than just, I understand your struggle, and, like, we can be sad together, and is coming up from this place of, like, empowerment and excelling and thriving here versus just trying to persevere. And that was really the first time that I'd witnessed it in action and been like, yeah, we can do this thing, like, we can become inspired versus, like, claw our way through the dirt to get to the other side, which is graduation.
Oh my gosh. You're, like, emerging from 6 feet under the surface.
I can see the light.
Yeah, I just want, like, yeah, like, I was really proud in that moment. A lot of other people said they're really proud, especially of you, just because of how, like, gracious we all were during the entire situation, like, within our groups and within, like, the actions in between students, POC, and administration, like, how we were so gracious and respectful, even though we didn't have to be. Mm-hmm. Why do you think you choose that path, or you chose that path on of being, you know, because you have every right to be angry and go out and have that affect things, you know, you have every right to go tell TV stations about what's going on, you know, so what was the decision making there, if there was?
Yeah, it was a really, like, planned decision. I think it's really easy to look at our letter and be like, wow, this is very thoughtful, and all of the things that people have said. And I think it was because it was designed that way. Like, we chose recommendations versus demands for a reason. We chose to try and work with the collaboration and, like, advice and dialoguing of administration versus, like, complete protests, all because Antioch is supposed to be this social experiment, supposed to be this, like, new type of living in which, you know, you've heard the motto, better and brighter ways of living is basically our vision. And I think it's really easy to kind of look at it in the kind of, you failed us, and now we're not giving you another chance because there's no point. But I think by modeling the fact that we can communicate with them in a way that allows for change to occur, I don't know if I believe that anymore. I think originally the point was supposed to be that we didn't want to aggress it in a way that would make them want to dissociate from this movement completely from the get-go. We wanted to pull them in and be like, yes, we can have this dialogue, and yes, we can move forward in a calm and compassionate way, and it'll be okay. But now, as time is going forward, I wonder if that was, like, entirely the correct answer, because now I feel as though they've become rather lenient of the fact that we started off so politely. Like, I think they're...
You think they're taking advantage of that?
Yeah, I think they're taking advantage of it, because it's really easy to associate patience with weakness in these kinds of situations, or, like, patience with lack of interest or lack of will, or compassion with, like, acceptance of the situation. And I feel like us expanding patience and compassion for them was just kind of, Tom is about to start and we had high hopes for him, and we're at this point where the diversity task force is moving forward and their plan is getting approved soon, and we're at this crossroad of, like, it's going to get better. But if it's a 5-year plan, it's not going to get better soon enough, which was really, like, we can work with your system so long as you understand that we want to move forward. But now, after having the opportunity and the window to be like, yes, we're going to model back to you the appropriate way of dealing with an ask and a community in struggle, they've decided to do what most administrations do, which is kind of stall it out, talk about things but not really get things done, offer support and commitment but then slowly close doors and get a little defensive. And I don't know, I'm concerned that the graciousness and the thing that we've been so applauded for in our, like, movement and efforts to do this movement might be at an end or, like, a close. And I'm just, I don't know. I know I, who was, like, the biggest proponent of this, like, we need to be nice about this, they can collaborate with us, it'll be great, dialogue, chit-chat, blah, 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 have definitely reached the end of my patience. Like, I've definitely come to the point where, like, the window, the door is closing. Like, every dialogue that we're having since this moment in the beginning was so open and now is so roundabout. Every, like, conversation and decision that made so much sense before is now kind of done through these layers of hidden gibberish that is, like, admin talk. And I don't know, it might be more advantageous of us at this point to just go around it.
Mm-hmm. So, I know that after our day of disappearance, we also had kind of a day of, like, a community day for, like, race dialogue. How do you think that went?
I was really excited about the opportunity to do that. I thought that Myla's plan to break up all of the faculty and staff and the white students and the POC students was a really good idea. And from what I heard, the faculty had a really great discussion, and the staff and the white students, like, it might have not been perfect, but it really opened doors and minds into something that was really advantageous for us in times of, like, our movement and garnering support. I feel as though the POC meeting with the president's staff, though, with, like, the students and the staff, might have been less successful than the other meetings. I feel as though the other meetings, everyone came in and there was a dialogue, and everyone came out more inside, like more engaged with the topic and learned more about it and were really willing to fight for things. But at the end of our meeting, I felt as though we hadn't really gained as much. I felt as though the students of color really spoke a lot and gave a lot of information and feelings and concerns and laid everything out kind of for this president's staff. But in return, we did not get the same courtesy. We did not get the same, these are our concerns, these are our feelings about it, this is what I would be interested in doing later on. And it didn't serve as a dialogue. It was more of a report out with some like questions, and it was a sort of, I don't know, unexciting, because it's hard to know if you changed their minds if they didn't tell you where they were to begin with. It's hard to know if you've made progress towards POC housing if they didn't say anything that you didn't already know going into that meeting. I don't know. I'm not sure it's successful for all the students of color, but I think it was successful for the other groups.
Interesting. Okay, so I still have a lot more I want to ask you about that, but we have to move on. Okay. So, yeah, so through the day of disappearance, it was about our POC hall issue and how we weren't allowed one. So, and one primary argument against having a POC hall is the phrase self-segregation that comes into play. How do you feel about that? And actually, first of all, what do you think of the word segregation?
The word segregation to me is very... it's a strong word. It means so much to do with like this, like separation and kind of oppression, that I'm not sure it really articulates what we're trying to do. Because I feel I put self-segregation in the same realm that I put reverse racism, something that you can't actually do. Like, it's not possible. So I'm like, oppressed or marginalized group can't segregate themselves because segregation is inherently done by the oppressors. And we would never oppress ourselves. Like, this movement, this like POC housing is supposed to empower us and to build community and to have sanctuary. And by separating from the greater community, we're only trying to build more community for ourselves. And once we do that, we can actually get more involved in the greater community. And so I think it's very peculiar that would be their like strongest or like biggest concern is self-segregation.
I also feel like it's almost patronizing in a way, because like we've gone through all of this, like all these things have happened. And so now we've thought a lot about what we want and this is what we want. And then for people to say, oh no, you're doing something bad to yourself. Like, that's patronizing and it's belittling a little bit. Mm. Sorry, I just want to add that, continue.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I also think this self-segregation implies this idea that by putting us all together, we're not going to interact with any other student that is non-POC ever again. And it's kind of ridiculous, because so long as you like leave the hallway to do anything, such as food or class or social events or seeing your other friends or anything at all, you're going to interact with white students. Like, we are the minority on this campus. And so it's not as though by separating ourselves or giving ourselves this little space, we're ever going to actually segregate, which is, I don't know. It's just, it's a lot. It's, I feel, one of the best things about Antioch and how they're dealing with this POC housing, in my opinion, is the fact that it's so easy for them to see a need for POC students to go around and educate white students and talk to them and be as though, by taking the concern of the white students and the fact that they won't be able to interact with POC students and they won't be able to learn how to interact with people of different backgrounds, we have to interact and integrate with all of them. And I feel as though by taking that concern as higher priority than the fact that POC students can't interact with other POC students on a regular basis, I can go like a whole day without interacting with another student of color, like a whole entire day. And it's a sort of, it's peculiar to me, but they are the majority. So like, if the majority's needs of being educated is higher than the students of color's needs of not educating people and just living their experience and being an actual student, then so be it. Let us self-segregate.
Oh, shit. Do you think or do you feel a POC hall is necessary on a small liberal arts campus like Antioch? Why or why not?
Hell yeah, it's necessary. I think it's more necessary because Antioch is so small and progressive. And I'm going to say that because as a progressive school, we have a lot of people who I think fear stepping on toes. And so they tiptoe over issues like racism. And every time we bring up race in like a normal social context, it suddenly becomes this like taboo thing that we can't discuss ever, or that the white people in the room can't bring up anything. And so they won't talk about it, but they'll think all these like super racist thoughts in their brains. And so in a community this small in which you have that kind of culture of this like underlying fuming anger or like white guilt or whatever you want to call it, it will be so much safer for everyone if they have a chance to process it, but POC students have a chance to process it as well outside of there. And so when you have like, in like a future situation, for instance, if we were to get the POC hall, I think it'd be much more likely for a bunch of people to go out to the dining hall and there's another issue somewhere and people are rallying against it or whatever. And people are coming up and being like, oh my God, did you hear about this like racist thing that happened? Because everyone goes up to any POC and asks them about any racist thing they heard on the news. And so when this inevitably happened, because we're at Antioch and they're all so concerned about things that don't happen on our campus being racist, come up to us and be like, oh my God, did you hear about this thing? Because we had all this time in our POC hall to be like, talk about it and chillax and just be like, oh, this is great. We'll be like, oh yeah, we did. I think we're going to do this thing. Did you want to join? And they have the opportunity to be like, yeah. And they're not dominating the space versus right now with the John Crawford case, which I think is the most obvious thing that happened. When that came around, it was a bunch of POC were talking about it, but it was hard to come together, an individual. And so the whole thing that happened around it ended up being super white led. And it felt as though they kept asking some students of color for like opinions, but it felt like such a separated thing where it was impossible for us to come together and really process our feelings about it because it's another person in our community, really like in the greater POC community of the world, that is being targeted. But it was so easy for them to rally around this thing and be like, we're going to do this thing for you. And it was just this weird dichotomy of like, how is it possible for them to all get together and organize so quickly and just be this weird being of like, we're going to fight racism, but so like not be able to have a space for everyone else who is not this white group of like dealing with the fact that white people did this thing to a black person to process it and to heal together. Like, it was just like impossible to build that space. And it took months. Yeah, it took literally months to get together and be like, we're actually going to cry this out and figure out what's happening. Versus if we lived together, then it would have been this easy as like going next door and being like, oh my God, like, let's just cry together in our common room and make popcorn. And then we can go out to the world and be like, we're doing this thing, guys. Like, come on. And like, even with like the Mizzou thing that happened in fall, Mizzou walkout. That was really easy to put together because the planners all lived in the Women of Color case unit. They went through their thing, they talked about it, they came together, they invited a bunch of POC to come over to their case unit. We got together, we did this thing in this environment where we were healing about it and talking about it, and then we invited the rest of the community to do the thing. Like, it's so easy to see the correlation between if we have a space and a time to get together, heal, process, then we can act and we continue being this progressive, part of this progressive small liberal arts school and really build community versus we can't get together to heal anything, so we're still in our rooms crying about it. And this other community that doesn't even fully understand what they really need to do in order to process this, like, make this easy for everyone involved versus just, it's not just white guilt, but there's a lot of personal things that go into it. How they can go and organize this thing and then invite us out, but not have anything that can heal us or empower us to do anything post that. And it's very weird to be on the sidelines of something where you should be in the front lines of, because this is your community's issue. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. I really like the thanks for the testimony about Mizzou, because I didn't know that. And I was like, I was really impressed because Mizzou had just happened. Mm-hmm. And then the next day we're like, hey guys, we're walking on Global Seminar. I'm like, when was this talked about? And it was, yeah, it was pretty amazing. You kind of already talked about how POC group affects you, didn't I? Or didn't we? Okay, well, let's just talk about a little bit more in depth, I guess, then. Yeah, so let's see here. I personally, I don't know, maybe I have a newer perspective. I'm a 2019er, and I grew up in a white community, and then coming here, and coming to POC group, I was a little skeptical at first. And it's really sad because of like things that I'd heard, right? And so I came and then I felt like I was being educated because I'm also white. But also I was being healed in this way because of the appreciation that happens within POC group. Can you just talk about how, like, I don't know, I'm guessing you feel maybe a similar way, and kind of how like your culture, or actually, yeah, do you feel like your culture is valued within POC group?
Yeah, I really do. So, like, I really enjoy what you just said, because when I first got here, so Iowa, where I was most recently from and I went to high school, there are not that many. It's, like, very predominantly white, like, 5% black. Like, wow. Yeah, there's, like, 10 of us. There's, like, 10 black people in a school of, like, 1,200. Not 1,000. So I felt really weird coming into that space because it was like a lot of different POC, and there like wasn't a group like that at my high school, and I just hadn't been part of that kind of subculture before since like Kenya. So it was this whole new thing. So I was like really questioning how accepting they would be, especially since I was not woke back then, like at all, like nothing. And after being there, like being in the group for the past years, I really feel like I've grown as a person and grown as understanding kind of what POC means and what racism and race really mean in a way that I hadn't fully come to terms with before I came here. But also, I'm really proud of my Kenyan identity again and like sharing it in a space at Antioch that isn't just kind of like me educating a person or being like, oh, blah, 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 blah. But, like, you know, every time we have, like, POC dinners, I'm always really excited to be like, I want to make this thing, but I also can't make it, and I also can't get the recipe because my mom's mean and just goes, just toss things in there. Like, Mom, I'm not you. That's not how I cook things. But, like, every time I go to one of those dinners and I'm kind of like, guys, I want to do this thing, and everyone's like, yeah, of course we're going to love your whatever Kenyan thing you make, and, yeah, we're going to have some grits that, like, Aishan wants, and we're going to have some, I don't know, just like wok that anyone wants, and this is gonna put it all together. But it's not, you're not confined into this, like, and now you're POC. It's like you're part of POC community, but you're still Kenyan, you're still from the South, you're still from wherever you want to be, and bring all of this culture into it. And that's, I think, what makes us stronger.
So how do you feel that, I'm not going to say theme. I keep wanting to say theme. Everyone's like, theme. But how do you feel as though that aspect of culture and acceptance will be used, if you will, or how it will play out within a POC hall?
Yeah. I love thinking about the POC hall. It, like, brings me so much joy. I feel like by having a hall, it's going to encourage even more culture to happen on campus. Like, I didn't have any, so if you're like to walk into my room, I have several like pieces of arts that I brought from like Kenya and Uganda, which I didn't have when I first got here. Like, it wasn't a thing. I like got all this stuff from like Target and was just kind of like blah, 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 blah. And like, I never wanted to have like my hair out from braids, or even like I felt really uncomfortable about my braids in the get-go, because it's sort of like I don't need the continual questions, and like I don't need all of this like stuff that comes with being in a predominantly white space in which they don't understand, they haven't experienced it. And Now, though, because you've been around me now, I'm like, really don't care. I like change my hair in the middle of the quarter. And if someone's like, oh, how did your hair grow like a foot in like a night? And I'm like, that's not how hair works. Mm-hmm. But I'm like a lot more willing to do that. And now I have like this massive like elephant photo in my room. And like I have like my tribal masks in there. And like I have so much, I feel so much more confident about sharing my culture because POC group has become stronger. And I feel so much more of a connection among POC and like the women of color on campus. And so it's something that like we're not super close. Like they're not my closest friend group. Like they're not like my clique here. But I have that community to rely on whenever I want it, and that's really important. And I feel like, I don't know, it's so easy to get distracted with, by having POC housing, you're not going to have any white friends. And I'm like, even now, just because I'm like, love POC housing and want to like live in that hall does not mean that my closest friends here aren't white. Like, this is like a true fact of life. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to really help people really feel like locked down on who they are, because it doesn't take everyone accepting what's happening with you, and it doesn't take everyone kind of like being super knowledgeable about what's like happening around you, but it takes like one other person being like, oh my God, Melly, your hair is like totally like 4B-ing right now. Like it's so like just being able to have that conversation and being super crazy about it, and then just being like, yes, someone else understands and someone else is willing to like take that space with me, and like I can be at home about it.
So the very last question, we're almost done. Yeah, it's been like an hour and I told you like 10 minutes. Yellow Springs was once a place of great diversity as well as a safe haven for people of color, greatly due to Antioch. Do you think we can regain that presence once again? And I mean, you could talk about Yellow Springs or Antioch as an institution, like wherever you want to, whatever angle you want to jab at it.
At the direction and point that we're moving right now, I don't think we'll regain it again. I think at this rate, like Yellow Springs has really lost a lot of people just because of its gentrification, I guess. Like it's becoming more pricey and like more old and white. Like that is like where Yellow Springs is headed, but also here at Antioch, it's becoming less diverse. I think they're trying really hard to bring in more students of color, and they're trying really hard with like the first generation students, and they're advertising this like perception of like diversity and all its manifestations. But if you can advertise so much and bring in so many, if there's no support systems here, then they'll leave. And if you're not willing to build a POC house, like housing thing, if you're not willing to have a POC hall, which is like one support system that students are currently asking for, then what is to say that you're definitively gonna support students in other endeavors? And what's to say that they will continue to stay here and tell the newbies that come in that, yeah, this is a worthwhile place because I stayed mostly because upperclassmen told me that, yeah, there's some like race problems, but it's fine and you can get through it. But like last quarter, when one of the 2019ers came up and was like, I'm thinking about leaving. And I was just like, oh no. And I tried to like say all these things about why they should stay, but I couldn't really find definitive things. Like either you're committed and like you have something that you're attached to, but I can't think of anything that would make someone who isn't already attached here and who hasn't made friends here stay. Like there's nothing supportive about the system that we live in unless you like make it your own, like make it yourself. And not everyone can do that. And so like you have to accommodate to those people. And if you can't, then they leave. And that was just the experience. But I don't think the rate we're going at, if you're able to lose a third of the students of color that came in your year in two quarters, then who's to say we're not going to lose every other class after that? And then it's just going to fail. Yeah.
That was real. Do I have anything to add to that? Yeah, I think that, yeah, I agree with you in that, like, I mean, obviously people come here knowing it's kind of a choose your own adventure type of deal, but it's not too it's really not too much to ask for like a really basic support system,
yeah.
Not just for people of color, but for students in general. And there's definitely like, Perrin, you're running with him, of course. I really enjoyed his comment on the panel for COMSOL about how there's an Antioch movement, how there's an Antioch institution. And so the movement would make support, would bring people of color here, would have them come and want to stay. There's a lot of different tensions going on within that. And yeah, I think that the faculty administration is going to have to do some really crazy radical things in order for, you know, this college to survive. I mean, and when I say that, I don't mean that it's going to close down, but just like its mission to stay alive, you know, because it could easily, I agree with you, if it keeps going this way, it's just going to become like a huge facade of social justice and education. And to a certain extent, it already was that, but it's just going to continue to manifest more into that. Yeah. Yeah, but do you have any other like things you'd like to touch on or just any last comments that maybe I didn't hit about this whole situation?
I don't know. I feel like the only real thing about the situation that I've really been tackling with this last week was I wonder when the tone shifted, when like, because I really feel that we've hit like phase two of this movement, where like phase one was this kind of energetic, we're willing to do whatever it takes to make you happy, to be supportive, to be the Antioch that you expected us to be. And then it sort of died away. And now we've hit phase two, which is kind of more defensive, more unwilling to be honest in their efforts. And I wonder why it's so difficult for the administration to now talk about race in a really like pointed way. Like to just sit down and be like, this isn't an issue of diversity, or this isn't an issue of blah, 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 and like buzzwords, but just say, this is an issue on race and we're gonna deal with it. And I guess I'm not sure where my like comment about that is. It's just sort of like, I'd be curious to see how phase two goes from phase one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll tune in next week to Melly and Mari talk about race and Antioch College and Yelps. Yeah, thank you so much. Oh, by the way, I forgot to have you say your name in your year, so do you mind doing that really quick?
My name is Melly Osanya, and I'm a second year, class of 2018.
Thanks, sorry.